This episode brought to you by Aaron's consistent mispronunciation of Denis Villeneuve. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Screen Test Summer. For this episode, we have another blast from the past from our decade or so, not quite that long, of real movie talk. This episode was after Aaron and I watched Dune, Part 1 from Denis Villeneuve. We discuss the movie, but we also discuss an adaption of the book that never came to fruition, but man, oh man, if it did, be sure to listen to this and just contemplate, what if this movie existed? Again, this is Screen Test Summer, so for the next few weeks, we are bringing you older episodes that maybe you missed, or maybe it's just time to revisit, because November 3rd, 2023, Dune Part 2 will grace our theaters. It's been a minute since Dune Part 1. It was that horrible simultaneous theater and HBO Max Plus, whatever it was called back then, release. So some people saw it, some people didn't, some people didn't know it existed, some people watched it on their tiny little TV screen, and their souls weren't rattled by that music in theaters. What a shame. But Aaron and I saw it, we reviewed it, he read the book, I did not, so he filled me in on a couple things. But this is Dune Part 1 and the Dune that never existed as we prep for Dune Part 2. Aaron, if people listened to last week, they know that this is a shorter episode because we recorded this, I guess technically now, 2 weeks ago.
We're in the future, Chaz.
We're in the future and the past all at the same time.
It's crazy.
You know what people have had time to do in those 2 weeks?
Sleep.
Watch Dune, whether in IMAX, in a regular theater, on HBO Max, because Warner Brothers has a bad business plan.
Yeah. I probably should have gotten that answer right.
You should have. Yeah. We're on the Dune buggy. Yeah. So we're going to talk about Dune this week.
All right.
But we're not going to talk about the Dune you think we're going to talk about.
Okay.
We'll get there. I just have a question for you.
Yeah.
What if Taika Waititi made Dune?
What if he made it? Well, it'd be funnier.
Could be.
What do you mean could be?
I mean, I was laughing the whole time.
Did he make a Dune?
The families are getting murdered.
You know it would be funny.
Spoiler alert.
You know it'd be funny.
Well, I want to take you on a little journey that's going to lead us through Dune straight to Taika Waititi.
Well, okay. Chaz, I'm just going to trust you on this adventure, okay? Because I have no clue what the heck you're talking about or where this is going.
Have you heard of a man, filmmaker, named Alejandro, I'm going to butcher this last name, Jodorowsky?
No.
So this is a French filmmaker who wanted to make the movie Dune.
Okay. When? How long ago? A long time ago?
70s.
All right. That's a long time.
This would have been the most insane adaptation of the movie Dune ever to be created.
Okay. How so?
So Jodorowsky wanted to make an adaptation of Dune in 1974 that it fell through, but it is now called the greatest movie that has never been made.
How is that possible?
The movie was set to be 14 hours long.
Holy smokes.
And production actually started, and they had a script, which is described as big as a phone book.
Okay.
What's more is that Jodorowsky wrote and was going to direct this movie, never read Dune.
What?
He had people describe it to him, and I assume you understand kind of in the realm of what type of director we're talking about at this point. 14-hour movie, French director, very art house.
Yes.
Pink Floyd, so contracts were signed. Pink Floyd was tapped to do the soundtrack. The movie would star Jodorowsky's own 12-year-old son as Paul. Okay. So we would have got a 12-year-old Paul doing martial arts. David Carradine would have been Duke Leto. You know who David Carradine is?
Yep.
For those of you who don't, it's Bill from Kill Bill. Salvador Dali would have played the Emperor. And okay. Let me remind you again, contracts were signed.
Yeah, like this is happening.
It's not like he said, oh, I would like for Dolly.
Yeah, he's not just saying names.
Dolly was on set. Charlie Chaplin's daughter would have been Lady Jessica. Orson Welles would have been the Baron. And Mick Jagger would have been the Baron's nephew. I think his name's Feud.
So this would have been, I mean, this sounds like this would have been like a fever dream of a movie.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And I want to know this guy's motivations. Why would you not know anything about Dune but want to make a movie about it?
He's a very eccentric man.
You think?
I want to say he's in his early 90s now. But just listening to him talk, there is a documentary on this movie.
This is exactly what I want.
It's called Jodorowsky's Dune.
All right. I want to see this.
Absolutely. Now. Yeah. We need to watch it. I have not seen it, but I've done the research. Dolly demanded in his contract $100,000 an hour.
Okay. That's reasonable.
They said, sure. Jodorowsky went back through the script and wrote him to where Dolly would be working for 1 hour. So he would be the lowest paid person. Do you know what Orson Welles wanted in return?
Peanuts.
Free lunch. You weren't.
Oh!
he wanted pick of who provided food, craft services.
That's amazing.
And he signed on because of that.
I love the idea of like a motivation just being food. That's like Orson only motivation. Yeah. That is amazing.
Yeah, it's insane. But they decided that they could do Dolly for 1 hour and all other scenes of the Emperor could be a Dolly-looking robot.
And in all fairness, if you've never read the book, then you could do whatever the heck you want, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Fair enough. He had a flaming giraffe by the Emperor's side.
Okay, I love flaming giraffes.
As I mentioned, Geraldine Chaplin, daughter of Charlie Chaplin, was set to portray Lady Jessica, but that was not Jodorowsky's first choice. His first choice was Charlotte Rampling, is how I think you say that. She declined when she read the script and found out there was one scene where 2,000 extras would literally poop themselves on screen. She said she didn't want to be any part of this and left.
I am so baffled right now. I mean, she said she read the script, so she read a phone book.
I mean, she may have just got
she
to that
it
point.
She made it to that scene. I would love if that was like three pages in. Like it's immediately in the beginning of the movie, and she's like, well, I am going to decline.
Yeah.
I do not recall a scene in Dune where that happens. So well, where does that happen?
He didn't read the book. So,
but who described that to him? I would love that if like halfway through they're describing, they're just messing with him.
Yeah, and he's like,
he's like blown away. Like, he's got so many visions.
Here's where it gets interesting.
Okay. Oh, this is where it gets interesting? This is the part, Chaz?
This is a well-known French filmmaker.
Okay.
Who just directed the 2021 Dune?
A French director.
A French director.
Yeah.
And now knowing this stuff, there is no way that he was not aware and maybe even a fan of Jodorowsky's Dune. Because...
Well, how could he be a fan of it? You couldn't have seen it.
Right, but just the concept. I'm a fan.
By the way, how did this fail?
We'll get there.
Oh, okay. Because I was like, it feels like you're moving on, and I want to make sure I know why this failed.
So the person originally tapped to do Lady Jessica, Charlotte Rampling, is the Reverend Mother in Denis Villeneuve's.
That's pretty great.
Yeah, so he was like, yeah, we're bringing her back. We're not going to have 2,000 people pooping themselves. Yeah,
that's pretty great.
Can you imagine being an extra and signing that contract?
Yeah, I don't understand. I want to see. I wish this movie did exist.
Yeah. So you asked how it failed. They went to Hollywood and said, we're making a 14-hour movie is how it failed.
Yeah.
The budget was $2 million before they ever even got to... I'm not going to say the budget. What they spent was $2 million before they ever got to a place to film this movie. So Hollywood said, nah, this is going to cost too much, and we're never going to make our money back because you're literally making a 14-hour movie, and they pulled the plug on it. His response was, well, Hollywood doesn't understand French cinema. Fair enough.
Yeah, that is true. I don't think the world understands French cinema.
Yeah, if this is French cinema,
yeah,
I'm a fan, but I don't get it.
I don't get it, but it is awesome.
The special effects supervisor for the movie was named Dan O'Bannon. He put so much work and time and money into this that when it fell through, he was left broke and homeless.
What the
heck?
He
lost everything due to the movie shutdown. Since he had no home and job, he just crashed with friends and worked on a screenplay based off of everything that he had like seen and everything that had been described to him on the set of Dune, and even took some of his props that he had created.
Like just flaming drafts.
Yeah, just in case that other movie got made. That other movie did get made. Well, do you have any clue?
I have no
clue. What he wrote? Alien.
Wow.
Yeah, so...
That's pretty amazing.
Yodorovsky's Dune is responsible for Alien ever happening.
Wow. That's actually... All right, so something does... Iconic comes out of that.
And the Baron's pyramid that would have been in Yodorovsky's movie is in Alien.
Oh,
so he had already started creating, so he's like,
good for him. Yeah. I do wonder if this director, Yodorovsky, was an amazing salesman, because how the heck do you sell everything for that movie? This seems very obvious it was going to fail and was never going to work.
Right? 14 hours.
Crazy.
All of that work was basically just abandoned on the movie, but Yodorovsky was not finished. He focused all of that effort into a comic book.
Okay.
It's a French comic book, so you may have never heard of it. It's called the Incal, is how I say it, which will now be turned into at least one film written by Taika Waititi and Jermaine Clement and will be directed by Waititi.
Wow.
The Incal, or however you say it, is a space opera centered around a PI that gets a mysterious artifact that is coveted by the most powerful people in the galaxy.
I'm into it. So, what you just described was the Fifth Element. I cannot wait for the sequel to the Fifth Element.
What we're getting out of this broken 14-hour mess of a movie is 2021's Dune.
Yeah.
Alien and a Taika Waititi space opera.
Wow. What a connection. I'm glad that you did the work. That's investigative journalism at its finest right there to find these connections. And ultimately, we probably found a documentary that we really want to see now, too.
I definitely want to. If I didn't have to pay for it, I would have already seen it.
Do you have to pay for it?
It was $2.99 on some
site. Not worth it.
Yeah. I will watch it in pieces on YouTube.
That's also good.
You know how people upload, like, whatever part one, whatever. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure it's on there.
I hope it's 14 hours long.
So that leads us to Dune 2021. Mm-hmm. People have had time to watch it. Let's talk about it.
Okay.
I think a couple weeks ago at this point, we gave it a score. How many sandworms?
I gave it 9 shy haludes out of 10.
I think I also did.
Gave it 9.
Yep.
Fact checker did not. You had the lowest score, didn't you?
He gave it a 3. Let me turn his mic off real quick. He gave it a 3 out of 10 and said it was the worst movie he's ever seen.
Wait a second. Hold on. What's going on? I thought it was pretty good. I was telling Chaz, I went back and watched it on HBO Max on my own home TV. And for some reason, it was almost the perfect movie because the pacing, for some reason, on a smaller screen made the movie just a very nice, consistent pace.
Well, the director disagrees with you.
It didn't seem slow as it was in the theater.
Yeah.
So, it was a great movie, though.
I've also rewatched it on HBO Max since we saw it. And it was not 9 o'clock at night, so it did feel better paced.
We saw the movie at 7.
Was it 7?
It was 7
o'clock. Well, by the time we left, it was 9:30.
Well, yes, it's a 2.5-hour-long movie, but it wasn't 9
I have a 6-month-old. Everything is 9 o'clock. Great.
Everything. As soon as it's dark out, it's 9 o'clock.
Yeah, which is right now like 4:30. It's dark outside.
Ultimately, this movie is an impossible movie to make. As we've just heard, it should be 14 hours long.
Flaming giraffes.
With flaming giraffes, apparently. It's an impossible movie to make, and there's... Halfway through that movie, you could, and this is my greater point as to why I could totally understand why people would hate this movie, is I'm watching it and I'm saying this is so faithful to what the book is doing and also filling in the gaps so perfectly. Mm-hmm. But the books are just so detailed.
Yeah.
And how they pace through them is so slow and meticulous that I don't know why that movie would be interesting if you did not. Like the book.
See, here's the thing. I knew you read the book.
Yeah.
I thought about watching the David Lynch movie, but then I thought, no, Aaron's got some background going into this. I want to go in completely blind.
Yeah.
So I knew nothing about Dune except for what you told me. So you saying that makes me feel interesting that I like it so much.
Yeah.
I was talking with friends about it yesterday. I've seen it twice now. I think I like this one movie, apologies in advance, fact checker, than any Star Wars movie.
Well... Here's what I do kind of hate about that, though. I think I mentioned it to you. I think the advertising for this movie was
poor. They should not have advertised it as the next anything. Just let it be
its own thing. They said the next Lord of the Rings, the next Star Wars. Yeah. And I'm like, that's a bad move. Because this does not fall into those categories.
Right.
Lord of the Rings, as nerdy as that stuff can get, is more popcorn movie than Dune is. It just is. And that's not to say there isn't exciting stuff happening in Dune. There is.
Yeah. You got to stay with it because they're throwing stuff out there so fast. They're naming people. It's a world that you're expected to be in. Nobody's holding your hand explaining stuff.
One of the things that's really fascinating to me about Dune, and it's not very obvious when you're reading the book, but it really sticks out when you're sitting in the movies, and it's like halfway through the movie, you're like, there are like 28 characters in this movie right now.
Yeah.
Like, there are so many characters.
By the way, I went in blind, so I didn't quite know what you were talking about at the time. You mentioned that you thought the nephew to the Baron would be younger.
Yeah.
It's Dave Bautista.
Yeah.
Dave Bautista is playing the Beast. He does have a younger nephew that has not been introduced yet.
Okay. So that might be what's messing me up.
Yeah. The young guy, I think his name's Barry something. We have a fact checker for just this reason. Has been rumored to have been cast in Dune Part 2.
Gotcha.
So he is the same age, if he's not the same age, he's really close to Timothée Chalamet. I think he will be the Baron's other nephew.
Yeah. And mind you, it's been a few years since I read the book, so I was like, maybe I'm just misremembering it. Yeah. But I was very, very confused by that. That didn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
The Beast and this feud something, Haderach or something like that, are both. And then Duke.
Well, feed Harkonnen is the Beast. Yeah. Pretty sure.
Not from what my research said.
I honestly don't remember.
Yeah. What was I going to say? Barry something. What is his name? He's Irish and he's in the Eternals. And he just got beat up recently.
So it's probably like a McElhenney or something like that. You said Irish?
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably McHarney.
McHarney. You even said it with it. Barry Keegan. Yeah.
Close enough. McKeegan.
He was in the Green Knight.
It's no Mick. So. Yes, he was in the Green
Knight. One of the things that also stuck out to this movie is this movie embraced the strangeness of Dune.
Like full tilt.
It fits.
Except for flaming giraffes.
And nobody poops themselves. Like, none of those things happen in Dune. So
if only.
I don't know how they would have ended up in this movie. But, you know, there is something so perfect about the timing of when this was written. And I know you had mentioned, which I knew this but also forgot this at the same time, that Star Wars was built off of Dune.
Yes.
Like, a lot of those concepts
were.
The
voice is the Force. The Sarlacc is the sandworm. There's a lot in it.
And it is kind of like an interesting thing in its time because I don't think anyone could write a Dune-style book today because of where technology has gone now.
Yeah.
Dune is like this beautiful marriage of like the primitive and the future all in one.
Which
it's sword fighting.
Is pretty much Star Wars as well.
Yeah, it's sword fighting. There's really no guns at all. They don't have AI, which is like when you think about the time where I don't think you could write anything future and not include AI because AI is so present in our lives today.
Based off of my research, I don't know if it's a prequel or something, but it's said that they don't use AI because they went through an AI war.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like there's a history that leads to it. So, but to me, it's such this interesting combination of these things. But it also understands, and I guess you kind of get that in Star Wars, but like religion is woven into the future technology, which is just, I think, really, really cool. It gives this, it gives it this interesting take on the future, but it's also very grounded. It's very interesting.
The Batarian Jihad is what it was called. The war against the AI machines.
I was about to say, what are you talking about?
And that's why I thought the movie, because there are so many things, so many elements, like the Bene Gesserits.
Yes.
And then even understanding the Fremen. And then also barely touches on the Mentats.
Yeah.
And then the Sardaukar randomly show up in the film.
Best scene in the movie.
Yeah, the Sardaukar. When they go to the planet with the chanting is so strange.
Yeah.
But it's so striking.
Yes.
Mm. It's such a striking scene. But you learn virtually nothing but the Sardaukar.
Right.
They just are basically
that they are the Emperor's sword.
They're basically the Emperor's army, and they are joining in with the Harkonnen. And it's very briefly you learn about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just happens. And that's why I'm like, if I knew nothing about this, I feel like I'd be like, what is happening right now? There's too many things happening. Yeah. Too many characters, too many moving elements, and it's perfect.
I say,
it's 9 out of 10.
I say, someone like my wife, even my wife would never watch this, but someone who has that precluitivity, I guess, for watching movies can never watch this because you have to listen to every word that's happening. So if you look away, I thought about somebody called me. I think it was my wife at one point, and I thought, I'm going to answer this phone. No, I let that go to voicemail because I knew if I walked out of that theater, I was done.
Yeah, you were missing it.
Yeah, because I didn't read the book, so I would have lost everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, the only thing I didn't like about it, I guess, is the clearest look you get at the sandworm, it's so dark you can barely see it.
Yeah, you'll get way more of it in the second half.
Right, yeah. I figure there's no way this is it.
No. Like, it becomes fairly important plot point for what happens with Paul moving forward. Even again,
he will ride that jank, didn't he?
Yeah, I don't. He might. I don't know why.
It's desert power.
The thing that kind of sticks out to me too is in the book, I felt like the sword from the Shai Hulud tooth was way more of an important element.
Mm.
And it felt so brief.
Yeah.
And it does. That's the other thing that makes this movie perfect for me. But also, man, I just feel like people would hate this. Is the pacing was so fast in this movie in comparison to the book.
Mm.
Where scenes like that, where she's trying to get a servant in the house, Lady Jessica, and knows that she's got a weapon on her. That just felt like it was so much more drawn out and had so much more detail going on. But the pace was like, we got to keep it moving.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still 2.5 hour long. Yeah. Movie. So you're just like,
a lot to fit into part one of three.
Well, I think it's part one of two. The third is not technically Dune.
Interesting. Okay.
I think they're doing Dune Messiah.
I know they have a series also just about the sisterhood thing.
With the Bene Gesserit.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is cool.
Yeah. Let's talk about casting for a second, because I had one reservation going into this.
Mm-hmm.
Duncan Idaho.
I thought he was good. Momoa was good.
He was fantastic.
Yeah. Probably his best role.
Yeah, probably.
He didn't have to do a whole lot. Fair. But when he was there, it was like, that's exactly who the character needed to be. It was perfect.
His face is a little rounder than I expected.
Yeah, I guess so.
When he shaved, I was like, what?
Yeah.
Is that fat face Momoa? which I'm not allowed to shave my face because my wife hates it. So I don't have much room to talk. But
your wife hates your face.
Yeah, my wife hates my face.
Yikes.
As she said, why don't you record a podcast and then that's how we'll communicate. Only recordings. But the casting overall, I think, was phenomenal. Timothy Chalamet, one thing that really stood out to me just as far as acting goes, because the story is the story. Like you said, it's very, very faithful to the book. Like, even when one character died, I said, oh, did he step away from the book? And you said, no, that's exactly how it happened in the book. But the acting during the scene where Timothy Chalamet has his hand in that box, I thought Rebecca Ferguson and Timothy Chalamet, amazing in that scene. How do you convey pain that no one can see?
Yeah.
And I think he did a great job. And I think she did a great job of, like, such sorrow of her only child about to die.
Yeah. It is a very interesting scene. But again, it comes on so quickly.
Yeah.
You're barely introduced to these characters. I'm surprised you walk away feeling that way, because to me, only because of reading the books, I know that the story is so central to those two characters.
Mm-hmm.
And there is an interesting dynamic of what she is. She's his mother, but it's in a different capacity.
Right.
But that scene does a very good job very quickly explaining the complications. Like, she can't speak out. Yes. Yeah. Like, she has her commitment is to the Bene Gesserit, not to her son.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of see a perfect.
You also see that in when she's talking to the Duke, which Oscar Isaac, phenomenal in this. His death, top tier.
Very good.
when he says, promise, he knows he's going to die. He says, promise me you'll protect him. And she says, of course, I'm his mother. And he said, I'm not asking his mom. I'm asking the Bene Gesserit.
Yeah.
And she can't answer, which I thought was really cool.
The politics and stuff that play into all that stuff is the most fascinating parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
I walked away saying my least favorite casting choice in there was Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah.
I thought he was too wooden through most of the movie.
I can see that. And sometimes he felt I don't know. I get that they're trying to portray that he is the son of a duke,
yeah,
and that's all he's ever known. But, like, he'll go from very soft and, oh, I just woke up, don't, to how dare you use the voice on it. I don't know.
Yeah, he, like, some of that stuff gives off punk kid.
Yeah,
100%. Like, punk rich kid.
Gurney Halleck, how he talks to Gurney Halleck, which Josh Brolin, I thought, was great in this.
Can I... I don't know if this reference is going to make sense.
Okay.
Did you know who he, like, immediately, which is funny just because of the names, who he kind of reminds me of?
Who?
Baron Trump.
Okay.
Kind of a dopey kid in some scenes, but also you could tell he's probably pretty snotty in others. And I don't know why. There's these moments where he comes off so bland and wooden and lame that it just doesn't feel... right?
Yeah.
Where everybody else felt like they were perfectly placed, he is the one that I walked away feeling the most like, eh. He had scenes that were like, that was good.
Yeah.
And then there's a lot where I'm like, I don't buy it. You're not likable to me. Like, you're not really like a character I'm feeling a whole lot for right now.
Yeah. He acted well, but some of his choices, I can see what you're getting at.
Yeah.
We'll see if he perks up in the second one, but who knows? So you gave it a 9 out of 10. What is the detractor? Where's the 1 point going? Is it just Chalamet?
No, I think the only reason you can't give it a 10 is because I don't think you could ever make the perfect Dune movie.
Okay.
And, like, let's take, for example, like, if I'm looking at the movie as a whole, the scene where Timothée Chalamet and, well, our, you should, Paul and Lady Jessica are in kind of like that little tent.
Yeah.
After everything's been destroyed and they're kind of stuck.
Where he has
and then he screams at her.
Yeah.
Like, you made me a freak. The problem is that, like, the setup to that is so thin.
Yeah, that's
it's
fair.
So razor thin. In the book, you understand that conflict leading up to that moment. So that moment has payoff.
Yeah.
Because you understand the tensions of what the Bene Gesserit is, how it's his mother who cares and loves for him but is also working for somebody else. So when you get to that moment where she's teaching him these things and it conflicts and hits that point, it pays off in the book. It doesn't pay off in the movie as much.
Yeah, that
and that's
I will
not
say,
their fault.
Right.
You just can't do that and make this a reasonably paced movie. It's got to be 14 hours.
Right. Flaming draft.
Exactly.
To your point, I will say that was what struck me the most of being out of place.
Is that moment?
I'm not reading the book. I'm like, well, he seemed fine up until this point.
Exactly. It feels it's a cheap payoff because it has to get so many elements right that you're going to miss these finer details. It's why I say it's a 9 out of 10 because it's the perfect way you could make this a movie, but it can't be a 10 because it is absolutely going to be missing elements.
Yeah. And I guess there's technically build up to that, like when they first arrive and they're chanting and he says they see what they were told to see and all of that. But just coming off of that vision that he had, which is the biggest vision he had the whole movie, and it's literally what they were chanting.
Yeah. What those things connect?
Yeah. Why are you upset now?
Yeah.
Because you're seeing what is true instead of thinking that what they are chanting is a lie. I don't know.
Yeah. And that truly is it. Because I don't think he was that bad of an actor that it like took me out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I still enjoyed everybody else in their roles a little bit more than I enjoyed him in his role. But that really wasn't my issue. My issue was just the pacing ends up becoming a problem because you have to pace it that way. And it ends up becoming an issue because you miss some of the finer details that I think makes Dune special.
Yeah.
You miss some of that.
How do you feel about every Zendaya scene outside of maybe 1.5 minutes being in the trailer?
Yeah.
She was not in this very much.
She wasn't.
I'm sure she'll be a huge part of the second.
She'll be big in the second part. But
the baby, I'm sure, will be a huge part of the second.
So
again, never have read the book.
She's fine.
Yeah.
She's barely in it.
Yeah, what can you say? I mean, she was, just fine for the little bit she was in it. But I would definitely recommend, theater if you can.
Of course. It was beautiful.
Yep. Let's get this thing a little bit more money. What I love and hate, Denis Villeneuve makes beautiful, 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 well-thought-out movies. They never make money. Outside of maybe Arrival.
No, but he does seem to at least... I think Hollywood recognizes he's worth it.
Yeah.
Even if it's not making a ton of money, they are still giving him contracts for big budget movies and people are still loving them.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they have like a long tail to them, like they end up making money on the tail end a little bit more than they do in the box office. It doesn't seem to be stopping. They greenlit another movie.
It's true. And a TV show.
And a TV show.
So let's see what happens. Again, this is going to be a shorter episode because we're doing it from the past, but I do have trivia. Last week, we learned that Frozen holds the Thanksgiving box office record. How many of the top 50 Thanksgiving weekend box office grossing movies are Disney? Caveat. I did include Fox.
So it's got to be a high number.
Out of 50.
Out of 50? I'm going to say it's 35.
I have a hint for you.
Okay. You always do this to me.
The number coincides with a club that musicians such as Robert Johnson, Amy Winehouse, Kurt Cobain, Janis Joplin, Jim Morrison, and Jimi Hendrix all unwittingly joined.
So it's the dying under the age of 35.
27.
That's still wild, though.
Fun fact, 12 of the top 15 are just Disney.
That is crazy.
Not even.
That seems more in line.
Not even Fox. Just straight up Disney.
But I guess Disney has dominated, but Disney has hit next level domination, I guess you could say, in the last 15
recently,
years.
Yeah.
So before that, fine. You would say there was a lot more competition.
A lot of Warner Brothers. A lot of Harry Potters came out at Christmas. Yep. But 27 of the top 50.
Crazy.
Insane. That's all I got.